Live from the Hall of Jackasses at the Donkey Basketball Hall of Fame in Boston, Massachusetts, it's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes, hard-hitting, no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and all-too-dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, author, statesman, accomplished and seasoned banjoist, the legal representative for the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, mentor to young attorney, and a man whose fingers you can always count on, Richard J. Ringhausen. And get ready. Marksman, sculptor, six-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion, winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, and a daredevil who once jumped off an 18-foot ladder, the youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers, and the star of your show, Alan J. You know, Ringhausen.
Yay. I'm glad you didn't tell everybody that I jumped off that 8-foot ladder while it was laying on the ground.
The bottom rung. Yeah.
Didn't say where, really.
You know where that stirring version of Johnny B. Goode came from?
ELO.
Roll over Beethoven.
ELO.
That was ELO's version of that, the intro of it.
You know, what's interesting is Chuck Berry, launched that. But his version is the least of the three main versions that were released.
That would be him, the Beatles, and ELO.
Yeah. I like Beatles version best.
The Beatles version, can't hardly beat it. Yeah. And that was George singing, by the way.
Let me ask you something. Piqued my curiosity here. If you took an 18-foot, we dealt with ladders a lot. In our youth, we picked fruit on the family orchard for real.
Correct.
That we're not lying about this. That was a fact. But if you went out, let's say we were back in our youth.
Yeah.
And we leaned a ladder up against the side of a building, and I step up on the first rung and jump off of. No, you're just stepping down, basically.
Yeah.
Second rung, pretty much the same thing. Third rung, you're kind of dropping down a little. No big deal. Fourth rung, fifth rung, still same thing. Sixth rung, you're up 6 feet in the air, or maybe more. I don't know what a rung. Rung may have been more than 12 inches. But let's just pretend it is 12 inches a foot. If you just kept going and jumping, increase it one at a time, eventually you could jump off an 18-foot ladder. You'd be used to it.
You're in the top of it. Yeah, your knees would get used to it. You'd build up strength a bit at a time, yeah. It's like boiling a frog. You just turn the heat up a little bit at a time, and he'll stay in there. He won't jump out.
How is boiling a frog and jumping off an 18-foot ladder an analogy? How is that remotely the same?
Because if you just take a frog and drop him into a pot of boiling water, he'll leap out immediately. But if you put him in a pot of cold water and gradually turn the heat up, he'll stay in there. He'll be able to stay in the hot water.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is.
No, I don't believe that for a minute.
Well, you're
wrong.
He'll
jump out like crazy. No. The analogy that I was looking for was if you have a baby calf just born, and you go out and you pick it up, because you can pick up a baby calf. They're not that heavy.
Not heavy.
If you went out every single day and picked that calf up, you'd eventually be picking up a full-grown cow.
That is correct. And that's how we used to do it in the cattle business.
That's how we used to load cows.
Yeah. What was that guy that we were going to have on here, that Gettin, ran cow business?
Oh, yeah, Billy Gettin.
And he canceled on us because he had, bad teeth?
Back from lifting cows.
Yeah, I mean, I had every intention of asking that question.
When you were a kid, did you go stay at the Gettin's Dairy Farm?
Yeah.
And
I was in the same school with Weasel in the one-room school, so I just went over and visited with him.
Right. So there were a whole bunch of the Gettons. And,
oh, yeah.
And
probably more than you needed.
There was one in my class also, Donnie Getton, the one they call Shoes.
And they ran a dairy farm.
And they had I don't know how many cows.
Big dairy farm.
They were milking.
And you had to milk them twice a day, every day.
And what was the building that they would actually do the milking in? What did they call that?
The Dairatorium.
No.
What?
It was the milk parlor.
Oh, yeah, the milk barn.
Not the milk barn, the milk parlor.
Yeah, like they were serving up milkshakes in the corner of it.
Yeah. But, you know, if you hung out in the milk parlor, you learned a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, you learned to swear.
Yeah. Learned all kinds of new words in there.
Yeah.
And it was always interesting. They knew the nature of each one of the cows that was going to come through there.
Yeah, I mean, when you see the cows.
Here comes number 21.
You know, they bring them in to feed them.
They're 21.
While the cows,
watch her.
While the cows are eating, they would hook the suction cups up to the teats. And the machines would milk them.
Right. Now, you know, in the amount of time that I, you know, kind of hung around out there, they went through a change. You know, they had the old milk barn that was kind of...
You mean milk parlor.
Yeah, that, you know, was all one level. You know, the cows stood on the same level of floor that you were on, and they had those milk things that had like a 3 or 5 gallon container that actually hung from the cow and, you know, or like a spring from the ceiling and then attached to the cow. And then they had to carry those into the next room where they would empty them into a large tank. But, I don't know at what age I was when they changed. They built a new milking barn to where the cows were up higher and you walked in a central corridor that was down lower.
Like guys who change your oil in your car now.
Yeah. So you were like at eye level with the udder.
Or the oil pan.
And in this case,
you know,
then,
they're kind of the same in that regard.
They had like a central suction system, and you just hooked these suction cups onto the udder, and you never had to carry the milk. It pumped it all into a big tank. But when you would stay there, you know, like go visit, they would serve you milk.
Oh, my God. I can remember when I went to visit with Weasel.
Yeah.
And it was breakfast time.
Yeah.
They brought cereal out and poured it.
Yeah.
And then they brought out a picture of not milk in a plastic carton like it's supposed to be.
It was a picture
carton
that they dipped out of that tank.
Yeah, with just cow's milk in it.
Yeah, cow's milk. And it was the thickest milk.
Oh, I couldn't drink it. I refused.
It was incredible.
I politely refused. I was in first grade.
And they're all like, what's wrong with this? Good. That's good for you. Do you get all that?
Oh, yeah. I'm not drinking cow's milk. Bring me some of that store milk.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They just thought that was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they couldn't climb a ladder for heck.
Heck no. And they certainly couldn't jump off the 18th rung.
Or carry it with one hand.
There you go.
Upright.
But the other thing that was interesting, you know, since they had such a big family, there's like 7 of them, and you go stay there, and like Donnie, the one that was our age, was the youngest one of the bunch. So you go there.
Other than the sister.
And yeah,
she didn't really count because she was
saw her. And so in the place where they stayed upstairs, they had like two rooms up there.
You mean the dorm.
And that's what it was like. You know, this had all these beds, and you just pick one. And, like, all the brothers were out, you know, at town, you know, because they were in, like, high school.
Because the older ones had learned how to drink by
that
point.
How to drive. And,
I meant drink.
So then, you know, you'd be in bed in, you know, like, I don't know what hour of the night. They all kind of one by one come in, and they'd all just kind of pile into the same, and you'd get pushed over, you know. It was a different experience.
Now, back then, you know.
It was entertaining.
They had already gotten, like you said, the system where the milk was just pumped directly from the udder to the tank.
Right.
So they lost a bit of life experience there of actually having the milk go into a bucket.
Right.
And having the cow kick the bucket.
Right.
You know, the big Chicago fire started because cow kicked over a bucket.
That's not true.
That is true. They do well. It started in Mrs. O'Leary's barn is 100% true.
That it did start in her barn,
and probably a cow kicked the lantern over.
Maybe, but you know, nobody can prove that.
But cows would kick the bucket over,
or step in it, or you know, step like, in it, yeah. Rearrange their footing.
Have you ever hand milked a cow?
From start to finish, no, never. Really? I've tried it. Yeah, I've done the milk and
But you see guys that could do that. I mean,
well, the guys that can do that, you know, that's a skill. That's an art. Yeah.
The old guys that could actually milk a cow.
And those guys have a handshake out of this world. Yeah. You got the big. They got the Popeye forearms from all that squeezing all the years. Up until recently, I think like the Amish were still milking their cows by hand.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think they are.
I'm not going to tell my Amish story.
I'll tell mine.
Tell yours.
Dennis and I went to an farm auction, and it was, I don't know, it was over in Indiana someplace, but it was in
Michigan.
It wasn't in Michigan. It was in Amish country, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we have, you know, quite a bit of interaction with the Amish because, you know, we're buying fruit from them and different things like that, but, or selling fruit to them. But we go over to this Amish community, and the only reason we went is because the farm sale was, part of it was an orchard, and they had some apple crates that Dennis was interested in acquiring.
And for those listeners who don't know, the orcharding is kind of a specialized area of farming, so that there's special things that you need to run an orchard that aren't, you don't find just in your ordinary implement store. So
right, or so, your run-of-the-mill farm sale, they just don't have these.
So when there's an orchard sale, all the other orchard guys tend to go to it to pick up the things that they can't find anywhere else.
That's right. That's right. And at the orchard, at our orchard, we had two kinds of crates that you would pick fruit into. You had one bushel crate, you know, wooden crates that then you could stack and load on a trailer and a truck or whatever. And then you had the 20 bushel bins that you could move around with a tractor and a forklift and stuff like that. But what they had at this sale were the good old-fashioned wooden one-bushel crates that Dennis really wanted to get. So we drove all the way over there, and it turns out, you know, at an auction, they kind of map out, you know, the order they're going to sell things in.
Yeah.
And these apple crates were just like the very end. So we were going to be there for the day. And so we're kind of walking around. But the community was an Amish community. So when we pull up to the auction, there are probably 150 horses and buggies all parked in this field. And then the rest of the vehicles were, you know, like pickup trucks and a few cars and stuff. And so we were kind of in the minority. And Dennis and I kind of milled around there for quite a while. And we were standing over by the crates at the edge of this field. And we see this group of Amish men standing just not far from us.
Like a gang.
Yeah, and they're talking in German. Yeah, we can hear them talking. And finally, but they're looking at us. And and finally, one of them, who was apparently chosen to come over to Dennis and I, walks over and says to me, "Are you related to Joe Ringhausen?" And, you know, we're in a different state. You know, we're miles from home. And I said, "Maybe. Does he owe you money?" He says, No. You look like him. We do business with Joe Ringhausen." I said, "Oh, well, yeah. That's my dad."
But if you say we look alike, I'm not sure which one of us should be insulted.
What the hell does that mean? He's like, "Look like him."
I thought you were going to say they're come to, like, the Jehovah's Witnesses to recruit you.
Yeah. They were going to take me and Dennis away and lock us in a barn until we turned over a new leaf or grew a beard, one of the two.
And that took you about 35 years.
It took a while. So anyway, that was my Amish farm sale story.
Okay, going back to the bushel crates.
Yeah.
The wooden bushel crates.
Yeah.
Now, my recollection of that, you know, and this is 40 years ago, right? Since I've touched one. That the crates they had all were stamped with the names of the orchards and farms that had...
From decades before.
That had bought them. And I can't say that there was a single crate that we used that could have been younger than like 30 years old.
Oh, they were all vintage material.
I mean, every one of them. I mean, I don't remember ever buying new apple crates.
Never. Never.
Now, over the course of using these crates, and as I said, every one of them had to have been 30 years old when we were using them.
Yeah, easily.
You know, over the course of use, they would lose slats at some point.
Right, and you were always patching
You'd
them.
Be picking up a pick up a bushel of apples, and one of the boards on the bottom would break, yeah, and it all would spill out, and then you'd have to fix it. And that crate would then get thrown into a stack where during the winter time, someone would have the job of cutting new slats and nailing them on and fixing the crates.
Yes.
During the time that you were in the orchard business, including today that you've looked back over the years, was there ever a single time when all of the crates were repaired?
I wouldn't say all of them. I mean, there's, you know, usually a few clinkers out there, but you know, there have been times when they've gotten close, yeah.
But never all of them.
Oh, probably not.
It's one of those jobs that...
It never ends.
Never ends.
Never ends.
Dennis, if you're listening, you need to get out there, fix those apple crates.
Yeah. That's one of those jobs that you're doing when it's like, oh, five above, and you're nailing a crate, and you hit your thumb when it's five above.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
makes it hurt 10 times more than if it was, you know, a warmer temperature.
And the other thing I noticed was that, as I said, you know, you used old apple crates that were from other businesses that it, where the apple guys had died over the years, you know, and someone had a sale and sold all their crates, right?
Yeah.
So there's really no company that's making new apple crates. So,
well, there probably is somewhere.
Well, there probably is, but I never saw them. It got to where whenever you need crates, we branched out and started using other types of crates. Do you remember the cheese crates?
No, the cheese crates were awful.
Cheese crates were crates that were hold just about a bushel of apples, but not quite. But instead of the holes where you would pick a handle, pick up the bushel, there were like two boards nailed on the side that you'd have to lift them up by those.
They were hard to handle and they were hard to stack.
Yeah. And then there were James crates. You remember
that? Oh, James crate. They didn't stack worth a hoot either. Plus, they were a bushel and an eighth. Yeah, they were heavier.
And where did those come from?
From James.
St. James.
You remember those peach crates, though, that had the extra, the corner posts were higher?
Yeah.
But they were a smaller crate.
If they were designed to not mash the peaches.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I never liked
that. That's never any good. That's no good. And then you had, you know, like when you're stacking a pallet of one bushel boxes, there would be a few crates in there that were a little bit bigger than the other crates, like those Troll and Yanes and Wagner crates.
Yeah.
They were just a little bit bigger and they wouldn't stack. And you could only put a big crate on a big crate or a standard crate on a standard crate.
Or you could put,
or you put a big crate on a
small
standard crate.
But you couldn't put it, if you put a standard crate on a big crate, then it would smash the apples. Yeah.
It was complicated. Let me get back to the dairy farm. When you're at the dairy farm, do you ever climb the silo? You weren't allowed to climb the silo, so that was what we wanted to do.
Yeah, I did climb the silo, but I did not go all the way up, and I got afraid and stopped.
Yeah?
Did you go all the way up?
I did, yeah.
Did you fall? Did you jump from the top?
I'm here. I'm fine now. No, nobody jumps from the top.
I thought you said they practiced jumping.
No, that was us jumping off the ladder.
Okay, I'm going to switch back to the orchard business for just a second.
Okay.
Okay. You know, all the years, you know, whenever you're picking fruit, we'd have dad, we'd have one really old guy that worked for us for years. And then you'd have generally guys your own age who were working for the summer for us.
Like high school, college kids, yeah.
So whenever we'd take a break, like, you know, you get a 10-minute break at 10 o'clock or whatever. Do you remember ever doing things like seeing how high you could climb on a ladder that was just standing without touching a tree or anything?
I was the best.
And how many, now what we're talking about now is just taking the ladder and
out in the open.
Out in the open and standing it upright.
You're holding it and then start climbing
and
as fast as you
how,
can.
See whether you can climb to the top rung of the ladder before it falls over and breaks your neck.
Right.
How high could you get? Could you touch the top rung?
I don't know that I could touch the top rung, but I got pretty far up it. And then you, when you get up there and you know that it's going to tip one way or the other, you slide down. You don't jump off. You just kind of do a slide down.
And you really don't get splinters in your fingers because the ladders have been
worn so long.
Worn so smooth, yeah. What I'm about to say there is I went to the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey's circus.
And the guy climbed up one side and down the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the darndest thing I ever saw. He comes out with this ladder.
I think that's what got us doing it.
And I told Suzanne, I said, we used to do this out in the orchard. And she said, you could climb all the way up a ladder and come down the other side.
Well, that never happened.
Well, no, I can't say that we did that. She said, well, you just said we did this. I said, well,
we attempted this.
Yeah. Nobody ever made it all the way to the top of the ladder and climbed down the other side. But I'm telling you, that guy in the circus did it. It was amazing.
Okay, there was another thing.
We should have had him work it in the orchard.
That we did when Dad wasn't watching. Remember, Larry Klunk would stand his ladder, you know, like straight up. It was an 18-foot wooden ladder. He'd stand it, you know, like it's sitting on the ground, and then he'd reach down and grab the bottom rung and lift it up above his head and hold the ladder with one hand.
Oh yeah, I've
from
seen
the
him
bottom
that.
Rung to where
and we're talking up. Where the ladder is still straight up and down.
Right, and he'd kind of have to run, you know, back and forth a little bit to keep it balanced, but he could do that.
Could you do that?
I don't know that I could lift it with one hand. No, I couldn't do that. Not without hurting somebody.
Yeah, it was an amazing demonstration of strength.
It really was. It was pretty cool. So, anyway, don't try this at home.
No, kids, don't do this at home.
Try it at somebody else's place.
Okay. Going back to the milk business. Are there any dairy...
To where?
The milk business.
Oh, we're back at the dairy farm.
Are there any dairy farmers left in the...
world
in the county we live in?
I think there's one. I think
still where you
it's they, fairly where automated now. Yeah, right there. You know, one of the problems was it was a lot of work and it was a lot of regulation. But you know, that's the issue. There is that you had, without fail, you had to milk the cows morning and evening.
Christmas,
without fail.
Easter, New Year's, really, really cold, really, really hot.
Cows. Somebody in the family's getting married. Doesn't matter. Somebody's got to milk the cows. There's a big party on Saturday night. Doesn't matter. Somebody's got to milk the cows.
Now, once it...
It's 5 below 0 outside. Doesn't matter. Somebody's got to milk the cows.
Once it whittled down to the older brothers were taken off, and it was just down to, like, the younger couple who... My recollection did like to go out on Saturday night. Were you ever a time when you were like with your buddy and he said, oh God, I forgot I was supposed to milk the cows today. And, and had to dash in and do it like at 12 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night.
No, you didn't let him go that long. The other thing that I you know, crossed my mind is, so it wasn't just one family. There were like three families all did the milk operation.
Yeah,
together.
They were all gettins.
And they all had to, you know, do a rotation. Everybody had to take their turn. But I'm thinking, you know, like say it's your turn and it's Saturday night and you got a wedding coming up. Do you really want to go to it and all this? How do you call up the other, you know, and say, hey, Billy, I'll give you $100 if you'll do my milk shift? Not just, you know, trade. I'll trade you plus $100. I wonder what the going rate was.
I'm guessing it was more along.
What you had to do to
I'm
talk somebody in there.
More along the lines.
You're going to
do
my shift for the next 5 times that it's my turn.
Billy, you take my turn or I'm going to tell Mom and Dad about the time that you...
Wrecked the car. And,
okay.
There could have been some of that going
you
on.
You and the neighbor's daughter.
See, you that's really how you this. Talk. The neighbor's daughter?
Well, they all got married. They found women somewhere.
Women with strong hands. Yeah, they probably want to get married young. Oh, yeah, you'll love it on the farm. We've got chickens and we've got pigs. And oh, did I mention we milk cows every day, morning and night?
And that there's 100 of them?
And you're part of the family now. So your shift is every Thursday.
You'll love it. And you'll get to be friends with all the cows and know their names and their attitudes.
You wonder how they did sit down, you know, like, say they had 12 individuals that were capable of doing a milking shift. And how they, if they sat down every month and divided it up, or if they sat down and did a whole year's time in advance, or you know how they did that.
I don't know. My recollection of the way the milk process worked was that when it was your shift, first thing you had to do was get the feed out to all the cows and get the feed in the troughs.
Well, yeah, before but you that, brought them in. That became automated also.
No, it wasn't automated when I did it. Right. They actually went and poured feed in the troughs and the cows came in.
Right.
And then, of course, then the cows get milked and it was eventually became automated. But then after the milking, then you still had like a good half hour, an hour of cleaning everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They had to.
That was the worst part of that.
Clean it out, spray it down, put away all the milking equipment that went through, you know, like a cleaning cycle. Yeah, it was a drawn out thing.
Otherwise, just the cleanup. Otherwise, there'd be like 100 million flies in the place.
Yeah. I mean, well, and plus, you know, you have to have sanitized equipment because somebody's going to be sitting down at the kitchen table drinking that thick milk.
Hey, Alan, tell us if this is still good.
Exactly. So, it's tricky. Plus, they had some cows that weren't being milked, and you had to feed them separate. And they usually had calves that you had to bucket feed, and so somebody had to put that out.
What I remember going there was that
there's a whole variety of issues.
Not only that pitcher of milk on the breakfast table, which was came out of the refrigerator, it was cold, but they would occasionally like squirt a cup full out in the barn.
And here, take a drink.
Take a drink of this. I drink warm milk.
Yeah.
Just straight from the cow. Did you see Napoleon Dynamite when he has to drink the milk at that egg farm?
Yeah.
This is like that.
Cow tastes like it's been in an onion patch. They ever put you up on a cow? You know, like there'd be a cow in there, and you know, it'd be, this one's gentle, and they'd put you up there, and then when it was time for it to turn the cow out, it'd go through the door and rake you off.
I was too terrified.
You gotta watch it.
Nice thing about an apple tree, won't kick you, won't bite you.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it won't take a dump on you. That would happen in there, too.
Yeah, that.
Step back, step back!
Now there's going to be more cleanup.
Yeah. That's part of the farm.
Yeah, they'd scoop that and then haul it out and scatter it on the fields.
The other thing that I remember about going out there is they had that, like that playhouse, the clubhouse, or what is it? I don't know what they called it. The old house. I think they call it the old house. And they had, you know, like 20 baseball bats and baseball gloves.
Oh, yeah,
They had all their toys, and I think there's a pool table in there.
It was a farmstead that had, like, their main house where they all lived, but then there was a little house where someone else, you know, like 50 years ago used to live, and no one lived in it. And the boys all took it over as, like you said, a clubhouse of sorts.
Yeah, and there was a hole in the ceiling where they had started a fire. And do you remember that some of the rafters were charred?
Is that when they learned to smoke?
I guess probably something like that, or they were roasting hot dogs inside the building or something of that nature. But I remember that. See, we need to get one of them in here to clarify some of these issues for us.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if they listen.
Well, I didn't do it.
If they listen to this issue, this episode, someone's coming in. We might as well have them on the show as opposed to just getting a beating.
Clarify who the culprit was on some of these. I'm guessing that Weasel's going to get blamed for everything.
Oh, I'm thinking so. Of course, you know, this was years and years ago. They're all older than us. We're pretty old, so they have to be old men.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Too afraid of them.
Oh, they definitely are old men. But this is a kind of a fact-finding. The other thing that they had, I remember back then, too, is they had a combine, you know, like a corn picker, a corn harvester. And that was kind of a newish thing at the time. And if you went out there, you know, at the right time of the year, you got to ride in the combine.
I do remember that. That was kind of interesting. I did get that life experience.
Yeah. So that was kind of different.
Finally, we got one on our farm, too.
Yeah. And that's when we learned how to curse. No, I'm just kidding. We don't curse. It was a good combine. Anyway, Rick, believe it or not, we're out of time again.
That is hard to believe.
I know.
Well, I'm guessing that one of these days we'll have one of the Gettins in to talk about the milk business.
We'll get some clarification, I think.
Or maybe we'll get Dennis to
I'm assuming we're going to get corrected.
We'll call Dennis in to talk about the apple business, too.
That'd be good.
I don't remember him ever climbing a ladder, just standing out in the open, climbing up one side and down the other.
Oh, he used to do that all the time.
Huh.
He was like a squirrel.
I can't do it as much anymore with his gout.
Maybe we just called him squirrel.
See you later from Rick Gator.
And Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Federation. And with that legal in hand, see you later from Rick Gator and Alligator. This has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Except no substitutes.
Because there aren't any.